Now we are fairly into the mountains, and they are into us. We are part of nature, which like a fluid seems to drench and steep us throughout, as the whole sky and the rocks and the flowers are drenched with God. On today's episode, we enter the mind and heart of the great modern prophet of ecological consciousness and action, John Muir. Echoing his Celtic ancestors, Muir spoke eloquently of Earth's sacredness, calling the divine presence within it the life within all life. While Muir was not a perfect prophet, his passion for Mother Earth's sacredness helped generations discover a primal love for her within them. He inspired millions to discover the beauty of wilderness and wildness and the importance of their protection and preservation. Muir's voice is desperately needed in this moment of ecological devastation, both in condemning the course we are on and in recovering our love for all creation, which, Muir said, pulses with the divine. We welcome his voice today in this conversation.
You're listening to Holy Heresy, a podcast that looks for the questions found at the intersection of spirituality, justice, and the arts. Holy Heresy is brought to you by the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles.
At the base of Mount Sinai sits the oldest Christian monastery in the world, St. Catherine's. A sanctuary is there called the Chapel of the Burning Bush. It sits atop the roots of Arubus sanctus, a rare species of the rose family that is a long-lived, tenacious desert dweller. Legend holds this is the burning but not consumed bush Moses saw. As Moses was instructed, so visitors and pilgrims today must remove their shoes to approach it. Its trunk is guarded by a large stone wall, a disappointing fact for this tree hugger to learn this week. And its brambly branches that run halfway up the chapel wall, perhaps poetically, cannot be touched. Guests are led carefully, silently, onto this holy ground to revere this one sacred tree, once so fully aflame with divine presence. John Muir, this is how he saw and approached every tree and bush, every flower and creature, every hill and mountain. His was a mystical way of seeing, rooted deeply in Celtic wisdom, called seeing with the eye of the heart. The earth itself had become for him a burning bush, as he put it. And at the heart of this fire was divine presence, a sacredness that shone forth from all things. He called it the life within all life. Once sitting atop a Sierra Nevada peak at sunset, Muir wrote, "Yellow gold, the last of day, not gilding but golding to flame the tops of trees, spiritual fire burning in every tree, in every bush, in every stone." His words an echo of the poet Elizabeth Barrett Browning, who wrote, "Earth is crammed with heaven, and every common bush afire with God. But only she who sees takes off her shoes." Muir delightfully used the word incarnation when speaking of the earth, a term that most of Western Christianity reserved for Jesus. Muir applies it not just to Jesus or to humanity and the creatures, but to the matter of the earth itself. The winds, the waters, the springs, he said, are all words of God. The universe, an ever-unfolding text through which God is still writing passages from which we can learn. Thus, he radically claimed, what we do to the earth, we do to God. Incarnation's foundational claim is that the physical is the doorway to the spiritual, that the finite manifests the infinite. This is the way to that, as Richard Rohr likes to explain it. What follows is that all we need is right here and now, in this world. Heaven includes earth, and earth includes heaven. There are no sacred and profane things, places, and moments. There are only sacred and desecrated things, places, and moments, desecrated by our lack of insight and reverence. In learning to see this way, we find revelation after revelation pointing to what is deep in every place and moment, that all ground is holy, that every minute is sacred. But for Muir, this reawakening led to something more. For the goal was not just to perceive the sacred in all things, it was also about how we relate to the sacred in all things. The divine, he experienced, was never static, but like the universe itself, always seeking new form, new manifestation, and like the earth itself, forever unfolding. In paying close attention to this ever-evolving world and the divine within it, one finds their own invitation to growth and transformation. Moses finds his life and identity transformed in the presence of a burning shrub. For here his call comes to go down to Egypt and to walk the enslaved Hebrews to freedom. But it is not only Moses who is changed in this encounter. When Moses asks the divine who is sending him for such a task, who he might tell the people has sent him, God answers, "I am," or "I will be who I will be." God, always conjugating, resisting narrow confinement in any box of our making, evolving, eluding total grasp. However, the mystery of God does not mean that God is unknowable. Rather, just the opposite. The mystery of God means God is infinitely knowable, discernible in all things. Such a way of seeing the world and each other takes intention, time, and nurture. The young Muir was not untouched by the cultural conditioning and racial prejudice of the 1860s. His diary, when encountering the indigenous peoples in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, is filled with vitriolic stereotypes. And yet Muir evolved over time, learning to resolve many internal contradictions from his inherited culture and upbringing. The later lands he'd inspired the U.S. government to protect as national parks had original caretakers who inspired Muir's own spiritual understanding. Were we all to reverence and love the earth as indigenous peoples had for centuries, Muir would express, such protection would not be necessary. While Muir's reputation was diminished some by his prejudice, he learned to fully awaken to the sacred within every culture, race, and nation. All God has made, he said, is joined and one by forces as irresistible as gravity. Celtic wisdom and indigenous wisdom were deep calling to deep. Modes and means of dominance and control over nature were to be resisted. And instead, we were asked to see all of it as one sacred universe, all interrelated, which presented real possibilities for the flourishing of all life. Creative cultivation of the land and crops, for instance, gave us much of the food we still enjoy today. Tomorrow, as we observe Indigenous Peoples Day, what would it mean to honor the contributions of our Indigenous siblings while embracing their wisdom, that it might return us to our true selves, helping us see ourselves as part of our common mother, not set over against her, merely a resource to be exploited? What would it mean for us to grapple seriously with the destruction of entire peoples whose land we violently colonized, collectively hosting our own truth and reconciliation-like hearings as a nation that gave voice to and took seriously generational trauma from centuries of cultural erasure, to collectively grieve, repent, and seek justice for and with our Indigenous descendants? The fires through our lands across the world, a devastating result of climate change. The fires between us as peoples, incinerating our desire for each other's well-being. And yet another bursted oil pipeline off our coast this time, polluting the Pacific, killing untold amounts of creatures. These are but three parts of the destruction from our refusal to receive and live such a vision for the world. Yet imagining the fire in all things, the life within all life, the sacred shining forth in every tree and bush, every flower and creature, every hill and mountain and human life might well be our salvation, water for parched land and lives. What will change us in this destructive course that we are on? I suppose we all learn in our own ways and times. Moses learned it when he removed his sandals, his feet returning to the bare, blessed earth. The transfigured bush aflame transfigured Moses, who would go to lead God's people, the newly freed, across a barren desert. Muir also traveled into the wilderness barefoot, carrying as little as possible so that the wind could carry him further. "We need to learn with our heels," he said, "as well as with our heads and hearts. When our souls touch the earth, our souls more readily awaken to what we know, that we come from this place, that we are this place. Its sacred elements blaze in our bones and all life." In 2014, I began to frequent a county park near my apartment south of Pittsburgh. 500 acres of beautiful Pennsylvania woods, ample ground in which to get lost and to wander and wonder for hours. And I did, as often as possible. Eventually, going there felt like going home. One night at dusk, I was quickly descending a trail and was stopped in my tracks by a figure that appeared in the middle of it some 30 feet ahead. I strained my eyes in the fading light and finally discerned the outline of a red fox. His head, until then facing away from me, snapped back toward me as our eyes met for the briefest of seconds. Time stopped, and a profound silence descended. My desire to remove my boots was tempered only by the cold, wet snow beneath them. Just as quickly as the encounter began, however, it was over, the fox silently disappearing into the heavy overgrowth on the other side of the trail. 5 years later, the night before my final service at that church in Pennsylvania where I served, I went to those woods to sit one more time. I chose that location in which I'd seen the fox 5 years before, and there wrote these words, "One more time into these woods. They are holy ground for me. I feel exhilaration each time I enter them. My feet are the first to know, and their quickening pace signals my heart and eyes and every sense. It says, prepare to meet joy again. Apart from my congregation and the friendships nurtured here, I will miss this the most, the 4 or 5 days each week spent in the place I found myself consistently held in love's embrace through the most difficult days of my life. For years, the only place I could find myself truly in prayer, and where my love for the trail was rekindled. To be here is to belong here." That night, 5 years before, I hadn't just come to nature to find beauty or to escape from work. I had come because I needed a space to hold my first experiences with the full weight of depression. I came needing healing and recreation, and suddenly there was the red flame of a fox in the woods, like a burning bush, seen but not consumed, a reminder that hope comes even amid despair, that there is always sacred opportunity if we will only look for it. "Earth is so thick with divine possibility," wrote Barbara Bown Taylor, "that it is a wonder we can walk anywhere without cracking our shins on altars." Find time this week, won't you, to enter God's first cathedrals in all their wildness, restart or kindle anew a love affair with the world, and advocate for its renewal and protection. It can be Yosemite or a county park or a backyard or just the shaded place under one single tree. It will change us, yes, but will always return us to who we are and reveal more of who we always suspected God to be. Happy sojourning, dear companions. Amen.
If you enjoy the Holy Heresy podcast and would like to support these continuing conversations, visit fccla.org/give and follow the prompts. Donations are tax deductible and all gifts support the social outreach, faith-based exploration, and commitment to the arts that is First Church. Holy Heresy comes from the conversations that begin in our live services on Sunday mornings. Each week, we explore the growing edges of theological thought, the exploration of the links between science and religion, the challenges of spiritual practice in 21st century Los Angeles, and most of all, the joys of sharing community in the creative capital of the world. This podcast is produced and directed by David Harris and Laura Velfragen, David Garcia Saldana, production manager, Laurel Irene, audio mixing, originally recorded by Mark Doten, Casper Abbo, Danny Hess, Cameron Johnston, and David Mitchell. Musical credits for this episode include Improvisation on Hymn to Joy by Christoph Bull, Greg Smith's setting of the Navajo prayer, Now I Walk in Beauty, sung by Laude, directed by David Harris, Sheep May Safely Graze by J.S. Bach, and Singing for Water by Brent Michael Davids, sung by Laude, with flute by Brent Michael Davids. Thank you for your presence here today, where all are welcome.